Did it sink in and it scared you and that's why you started to get sober? Or did you just get to the point where you're like, I don't want to live like this anymore?
All the above. I got tired of the chaos in my head. It's always that chase, always that chase.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to Rise Above. I'm Kevin Lanning, your host. Joined by my co-host, two-time gold medalist Olympian, two-time lightweight champion of the world, Kayla Harrison. Today, we're joined by Amy, an Ohio native celebrating 16 years of sobriety. Her journey through addiction, jail, and institutions was challenging, but Amy's resilience prevailed. Now she's a beacon of hope as a drug and alcohol counselor. Let's rise above.
Amy. Welcome to Rise Above.
Welcome, Amy.
Thank you.
So, for the listeners, Aunt Amy, this is my aunt. So we obviously go back a minute.
Hi, Amy.
Hi.
So nice to meet you. Thanks for coming on.
No problem.
It's funny. You're in sobriety, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I can, and you must be in sobriety for a very long time because us animals over here are walking in like a bat out of hell.
The energy with Kevin is always.
But you're just like very calm and serene and just like you just even keeled. It's very.
April 4th will be 16 years.
Wow.
16 years. I know. Round of applause.
That's a long time. Mm-hmm. What is that, 2008?
Yes.
You got sober in 2008?
Yes.
Wow.
I went to jail that day.
I want to jump right into the jail stories. No, but let's backtrack it.
Yeah, let's backtrack it, okay? First, we like to get a little bit of information about you, mm-hmm. where you grew up, what your family dynamic was, like.
You know all that.
I do, but Kevin doesn't.
So where are you from, Ohio?
Yes.
Where in Ohio?
I grew up in Middletown, Ohio.
Okay, are you a Bengals fan or are you a Browns fan?
Oh, shit.
Both?
My mom and dad are going to be watching this. My mom's a Browns fan.
See what I mean? I told you we're a house divided.
My dad's Bengals and
Daddy-O's Bengals.
It was very fun watching the Bengals and Brown play because it was war.
Yeah.
It was always a good game growing up.
Yeah.
Did you guys go to a lot of the games?
My dad did. Growing up, we more went to the Reds ball games, going with my grandfather.
Cincinnati Reds.
Yes.
Yeah. Grandpa Ogden?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Your mother, didn't know that. Your mother, dad, and grandpa.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, okay. So you divided family sports wise.
Yes.
Siblings?
Sister. Her mother. My sister.
Oh, yeah. I know
Jeannie.
Her. She trolls me on Instagram.
She does. She makes
She bullies
fun of him.
Me.
She bullies him a little bit.
Kayla's mom bullies me on Instagram because I bully Kayla. So she comes
and steps to her.
Wonderful lady, by the way. Very strong.
You guys are super close now, but you weren't always, right?
No.
Yeah.
No, growing up was a little bit rough with her.
I know. I can understand.
Yeah.
Very competitive, right?
Yes.
Like her? She's a product of her mother.
Yes. I tell you, my mom, my sister, and Kayla are bossy. And I think as it goes down the generation... It gets a little bit worse, so.
Oh, you think I'm the bossiest? You think I'm more bossy than Mimi?
Yes.
I don't know if that's possible.
What'd your shirt say that I got you?
Aggressively helpful. Right? I'm not bossy.
I'm not bossy, just aggressively helpful.
Yeah, aggressively
she
helpful.
She cares for everyone.
She does. She's got a genuine heart of gold, but she likes to be in control.
Yeah. I'm a little bit of a control freak. I will admit that. But this isn't about me.
I want to bring it to her.
You.
We can bring it to her if you want. We can take turns.
Okay, so you grew up with a sister, my mother. Your parents, I obviously know, are still together.
Yes.
What was it like growing up You were growing up in what, the 80s, kind of?
Yes.
Yeah. What was it like growing up back then in Middletown, Ohio? Like, and talk a little bit about your early, because you struggled early on, right?
Yes, yeah. I did.
We were just talking about this in the car. So share, yeah. share
yeah,
some
she
stuff.
She told me to shut up and wait.
Well, I actually always do that with some guests that I drive here.
No, she started telling me really good stories, and I was like, wait, yeah. save it.
Yeah, I don't want to catch up with you right now. It's silence in the car. We're listening to music, and we're not saying a word to one another because we got to save it for the podcast.
That's exactly.
She didn't
I always
have
do that.
Music on.
I should have put music on, but I was like, don't talk to me in my head.
No.
So
I was actually blessed as a child. Grew up with horses. The only biggest problem I had was I had dad come to school when I was in the third grade, found out I was sitting in a box desk, and he about tore the school down. A teacher used to call me daydreamer.
You were sitting in a box desk, like isolated by yourself?
I was isolated by myself.
Because you were daydreaming or what?
When a teacher would, like when I'd get confused or wouldn't understand something, I would drift off. And nobody would relay that to mom and dad. But he come like a parent's day, dad come, and he seen me isolated, and the shit hit the fan. And that's when they started testing. I had a shitty psychologist when... That was, I had audio perception disorder, but I wasn't diagnosed yet. But the way how I heard things, it wouldn't connect with my brain.
Yep.
I couldn't process it. And the family doctor I had told my mom that I would just have a low IQ, teach her how to quilt.
Oh, my God.
And my mom was like, well, fuck that.
Go, Mimi.
My mom is a fighter and went through to another psychologist, and that's when they started the testing and found my learning disability. I had to have speech. I was put in. This is when it got tough at school, but they put me in a class with people with learning disabilities.
Oh, yeah.
That's when they didn't call it bullying back then, but I was bullied. I was singled out.
Come closer to the mic. Or you can bring it down.
Let me bring it
down. You can adjust it right to your face. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's perfect. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm a rocker.
No, you're good. You're good.
Ohio, you're coming good. Out.
Yeah.
So you were bullied in school. Do you remember the first time, or do you remember a specific time being bullied and, like, what happened?
Like, people walk by and... Look at her. She's a retard. She's in the retard class.
Oh, my God. And I will whoop somebody's ass.
So at a very young age, you were already feeling not a part of.
Yes.
And as an outcast. And acceptance wasn't there from other kids that you were going
Your
to
peers,
school with.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so that started at a very young age.
But you felt supported at home. Like, yes. Mimi and Poppy had your back. It was just, your mom and dad had your back. I got to stay professional.
No, you're good. Who cares? They got it. Mimi, yeah, we got
you're
it.
Okay.
All right.
I never shared that.
You didn't
them
tell them?
Later on, no.
Do you know why? Like, do you remember just feeling ashamed and, like, not wanting to tell them?
What age was this?
That breaks my heart for baby Amy.
Fourth grade, third grade, fourth grade.
Okay, so you're like 11, 12? Okay. Those are like prime years. I feel like 8, 9, 10, 11 is like really, you know, sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade. You know,
you're starting to figure it out. You're starting to think for yourself.
Yeah.
You're starting to like find your way a little bit.
Right.
That's how I feel about Kyla anyways, you know? Like she's kind of... finding her way, like becoming who she's gonna be, sort of.
Yeah, and like you're already outcasted at that age, and it's like you're setting the foundation of when you're really starting to make, you know, friends, and that's tough. That's really tough. What were some of, at that age, some of the coping mechanisms that you were using maybe to, were you aware of those feelings, not feeling accepted, or were you just feeling something, not really sure what it was?
Detachment.
Okay.
And then plus I had I had the horses at home, so.
That was your getaway.
Yes. Mm.
Escape.
That's a good, healthy coping mechanism. Were you messing around with drugs and alcohol when you were younger? I don't know. I was very sheltered from a lot of your story growing up, you know, so I don't really know exactly what all went down, to be honest.
Probably I used to drink Poppy's Pabst Blue Ribbon. Like, uh-huh. I would sneak and open it for him, and the foam of the bubbles,
mm-hmm.
and then hurry up, sneak and drink, but I wouldn't drink to a lot of it.
Right.
But it was already starting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably with food, too.
Yeah.
I cope with food.
Mm-hmm.
Because Mimi used to try to watch what we would eat.
Yeah.
But I remember going and sneaking food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I had a lot of weight problems, too, so that didn't help either.
Yeah.
So I was a bigger girl.
Yeah. A lot of the times we talk about all the different symptoms. So if it's not, you know, obviously an escape doesn't necessarily just have to be alcohol or drugs. It could be, you know, food. It could be, you know, even there's just that action of escape, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like you were experiencing that at a very young age. And what was high school like for you?
I was a lot better in high school because I was just with a tutor, so I had some friends. Mm-hmm. But I also was introduced to pot.
Oh, okay. So you started smoking.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And I was smoking cigarettes, too.
Cigs. What kind of cigs?
Marlboro.
What kind? Reds?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
When did
hundreds?
You first...
You were smoking hundreds.
No.
No? Regs? Nice.
Okay. When did you start smoking, Amos?
Probably when I was 15.
15?
I had a friend that had a horse, and he was driving, and he wanted to come over and ride all the time, and that's the one that got me started smoking.
Mm.
Plus, Mike's brother Marshall would come over.
That's my stepdad.
Mm. Okay.
And he was smoking.
Yeah. But I didn't know you guys knew each other back then.
Yeah, he lived down the road.
Mike and Marshall did?
Yeah. Oh. They lived a couple houses down on Strebe.
Mm. So you weren't getting into a ton of trouble when you were a young kid.
I just didn't.
Like the typical
cigs,
cigarettes, some pot, like probably drinking a little bit with your buddies.
Some horses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
isn't too crazy.
So then what happens?
I didn't really get in trouble until you knew, but the trauma didn't start until Patrick's dad.
Yeah.
How old are you at this point?
I had Patrick when I was 21, and then...
So Patrick's your son?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was abusive.
Mm.
Not a lot of people seen that.
Mm.
Did you ever hear me talk about Patrick's dad?
I remember him, but I didn't know that he was abusive.
Yeah.
Mm. I'm sorry.
A lot more mentally, verbally.
Mm. You guys were married, right, when you had Patrick? Yeah.
Yes.
And how old was Patrick at this time?
Patrick was 2.
Okay.
When we split up the first time.
What made you get away?
When he put me in a chokehold.
Mm.
And Patrick come to me screaming, trying to pull him off of me. Mm. And he took him and kicked him off.
Oh, God.
Wait, I'm so sorry. I'm a little confused. So you had, there's 2 Patricks, right?
No. Patrick.
Okay,
Patrick so is my cousin.
Is your son.
Is her son.
Okay, and then he was 2?
He was 2 when I left.
When she left her Patrick's dad.
Okay. Yeah.
His name was Mike.
Okay.
Which
Mike
is also my stepdad's name.
Okay.
Which is confusing.
Yeah. Okay. And then, okay. So then Patrick was abusive. How old was Patrick?
No. Patrick was her son. Her husband, Patrick's dad, Mike, was physically abusive.
I thought
verbally.
You were saying your son was abusive when he got older, Patrick.
No,
okay,
no.
I got
Patrick's
confused.
A baby. When got he's it. 2 years old, she leaves because
got it.
He
is abusive towards you. He put you in the headlock, he said. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm.
And then when I did leave, he was stalking, trying to come back. I left state for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Come back. I moved to a townhouse, real nice townhouse for a while.
You could turn it and even move it back towards you. Yeah, perfect.
Is that better?
Yep.
There you go.
But I remember one night having to call the police because he was banging on my door 4 o'clock in the morning when he was with another woman.
God, they're all the same.
Not all of them.
Not men. I just mean like abusers have such a textbook, like, it just blows my mind when you hear
the manipulation.
The manipulation.
The cycle that they go through.
The cycle. It's all the same.
And pushing you away, luring you back in, but the narcissistic behavior.
Love bombing.
And abuse, holding you hostage, using the kid as a pawn to hold you hostage. Yeah. Yes. It's like, that's
it's
textbook.
All textbook.
We hear that a lot on this show.
Yeah.
Constantly. But I cut you off, so go ahead. And. The whole stalking, he was stalking you, and it got scary, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm.
And he used to play mind games with me. You'll never find anybody else.
Mm.
You're just a fat loser. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to want you. You're a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's when I ended up having to move in with mom and dad.
Yeah.
You know, so I could get my divorce. He took the tags off my car, flattened my tires. Just tried to make everything as hard as it possibly could be.
Yeah.
And then when the divorce was final, he finally just disappeared.
Thank God.
Yeah.
You're in your mid-20s at this point.
Yes.
Okay.
Was that hard, being a single mom in your 20s, you know?
It was awful.
Yeah.
It was awful.
I get it.
If you don't mind me asking, what did Mike do for work?
It was factory work.
Okay.
It was Worthington Plastics at that time.
Okay. Okay. And then was he a drinker?
Not really. But the night that he come home wasted.
Mm-hmm.
And all I said was, "Where have you been?" I had dinner, and he just went off on a rage.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Snapped.
And that was at the time when your poppy had been burned.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
right.
I couldn't call them to come help me.
My grandfather was, he worked at AK Steel, and he was in an explosion at work, and over 80% of his body was burned. And talk about fighters, like him and my grandmother both, like he almost didn't make it.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that is when that happened. Oh my gosh. I can't even imagine. Your world is like, and you're in your 20s, like just trying to just doing your fucking best.
Yeah.
No wonder. Yeah. So then what happens?
Well, after Mike, I'm afraid to be alone.
A lot of bad boys.
Oh yeah. Afraid to be. I know that feeling.
Me too.
I know that feeling.
Me too.
I go from bad to worse.
Was it a codependency thing?
Yeah.
Or was it okay?
Yeah.
Okay. And okay, so you go to from bad to worse.
Yeah, that's when I met Elmer. I don't know if you remember Elmer.
I do. Ugh.
I wasn't with him very long.
Yeah.
But I haven't talked about my story, this deep of my story, in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a little bit weird.
Yeah.
But I wasn't drinking as much, but I was trying to hide it because I hadn't dealt with my past from Mike. me and your sister wasn't getting along, or your mother, my sister, because she was so bossy, controlling. She tried to be my mother, tell me what to do.
She tried to be the best sister she could, what she knew.
Yeah.
But over the top.
Yeah.
One day I got a call from Patrick's school. Patrick was in the first grade. And they said, I see signs of abuse, sexual abuse. And this is when you're just, your whole world comes tumbling down. And so we go get him, we go talk, we go make a police report. My dad's also a retired Middletown police reserve, so he was also a cop. So he knew a lot of the Middletown police. They interviewed Patrick. I also had to take Patrick to Children's Diagnostic Testing, which they can get anything out of a child without him even knowing. I was already away from Sicko. I'd moved back in with my mom and dad. A children's service case was opened. The school had to do that, but they come and talk to me, and it was closed. We got Patrick into counseling, and I couldn't even press charges against this guy because one of the detectives messed up the case. Before we had all the evidence done, she turned everything into the prosecution. And her name was...
Don't tell me.
We can't. It's okay. You didn't say the whole name.
So
gotta dodge those lawsuits, you know.
So you're
sorry.
I'm still very bitter about that.
Yeah, I mean, your son had been abused, and I'm sure, like, you've already been through the ringer. You're in find yourself in another fucking rock bottom, and I mean, what's it? I can't even imagine. I've obviously, so you know my story. You know that I was abused, but yeah. I've never been the parent. Like, what's that like? I can't imagine how helpless and... I can't imagine.
What goes through my mind is, why didn't I know? Why didn't I know? Why didn't I protect my child? Why didn't I protect my child?
But abusers know what they're doing, you know? They're predators for a reason. And it's not your fault.
But as a mother, I mean, that's...
No, it's hard.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, I've never been through it. I couldn't imagine. I have no problem doing a life sentence for my daughter. Plain and simple. I have no problem giving up my life for my daughter. Not even a question.
I thought about that.
I couldn't even imagine what you were going through. Yeah. And obviously, you're here now talking about it and sharing about it because... Yeah. You know, there are people out there that are in your position right now that, you know, don't have the answers and don't have, you know. So, I mean, if you don't mind, if maybe you can just elaborate on, I mean, that's a traumatic event. And, you know, I don't want to go there too much, but more so, you know, you didn't get sober until in 2008. And I'm assuming, if I'm doing the math correctly, this was around 1998, 1999-ish, the end of the 90s. Was there like a lot of blame on yourself? And like Kayla said, these predators know what they're doing and hide it very well. And, you know, did you blame yourself for 10 years? And, you know, during that time where you were drinking and drugging, and maybe talk about some of the things that you shouldn't have done, or maybe things that helped you to get through that time. Were there support groups that you went to during that time? Okay, so
not at that time.
You numbed out.
I numbed it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how did you numb that? Was it drinking? Was it drugs?
I would, where I had an accident, I was hooked on Oxycontins.
Oh, yeah.
When you say it like that, no. Kevin, every time no. someone talks about them.
If someone says Oxycontin, I can't help it.
Every time.
Sorry. I wasn't making a joke by any means. I'm pure relating to you. I was the biggest that guy over there knows what I'm talking about. My buddy John, we grew up together. Like, when someone says Oxys, my antennas go up.
Well,
sorry, go ahead.
Early 2000s, back then, they were prescribing them. Purdue Pharma. Mm-hmm. They were just throwing them out.
Yep.
Like nothing.
Gosh.
And I was going to several different doctors. I was buying them off the street.
Thank you. You could pull it out to you if you want. If you want to lean back, you could pull it out to you. Sorry.
Am I too close, too far away?
You're too far.
You got to pull it like right
up. You
got
to like make out with the mic a little bit.
Yeah, you can put your lips on the mic. It's clean. It's clean. It's a clean mic. So, okay, so you were doctor shopping. I'm very familiar with the doctor shopping. You couldn't go. You went to one pharmacy, then you'd see another doctor, go to another pharmacy, and then when that ran, I used to be the king of, I would go to all these doctors, all these different pharmacies, get all of these pills, fill 1,000 oxys, sell half of them. Okay, great, I have all this money. I would do the 500 in like 5 days. Oh my God, I got to go buy them back from everyone else because I need them.
I didn't sell them.
Okay, there you go.
I couldn't. I wouldn't have them long enough.
Yeah. Mm. Okay.
So in the height, were you already addicted to pain pills when, okay, so that continues through the trauma of Patrick. And at the height of your addiction, how many painkillers would you do a day?
I would get, the Oxycontin was a bonus.
Mm-hmm.
But for a prescription of the Vicodin Extra Strength, mm-hmm. I could go through 120 in a couple of days.
Mm. The ESs. Mm-hmm. And then you were doing oxys as well. That was the preference. And then the hydrocodones were the ESs, yeah. The Vicodin ESs.
Those were the, not little ones, those were the extended release, the big ones.
750s.
Mm-hmm.
The big boys.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then when I could get Xannies.
Bars?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm lucky that I'm not dead.
Yeah.
Your Mimi and Poppy didn't know the extent of it.
Did they know at some point?
They started to know when I was manipulating for money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Mimi, I need to pay this bill. I'm running short. Phone bill would get shut off. My favorite drink used to be Southern Comfort. I was drinking whiskey because I didn't want to go through the dope sick.
Mm.
Yeah.
You don't die from that, but you feel like you're going to die.
Yeah. What is that? Just if you don't have the pills and you can't get them, and so you drink whiskey and it helps with it?
Some. You get drunk and you don't give a shit about nothing.
Yeah, you just numb out even more. You still go through some withdrawal, but it eases the withdrawal slightly. So you could sleep at night.
Yeah.
Are you still living with Mimi and Poppy at this point? Is Patrick, like, what's going on? Like, where's Patrick?
Mimi and Poppy.
Hmm.
So you guys are all living at your parents' house. Okay. And what were some of the signs that, you know, were people starting to intervene in your life? Like, yeah, probably money was an issue if you were buying them on the street. What were some of the signs?
Nobody recognized yet because I didn't really have a lot of bills except for my phone bill.
Mm-hmm.
I would work enough. I was doing home health care too. So home health care people would have pain pills.
Yeah.
I would steal them.
Were people, did your parents know what had happened with Patrick?
Yes.
So were they giving you a pass almost and looking the other way for a while?
Probably.
Yeah, I'm sure subconsciously, right? Everyone, I remember it was like, it was like a death in the family, kind of, you know? Like, no one ever really talked about it, but everyone was always really... I mean, I was a kid, too, but everyone was really, like... no one talked about it, and it was very hush-hush, and, like, I didn't know that you were struggling. You were, like, the fun aunt, you know? Like, you were Crazy Aunt Amy. So, like, I didn't really know that you were struggling, but I knew that, like, something was wrong. But nobody talked about it. Nobody talked about it. Which I think was a problem, right? Like, mm-hmm. if we're being honest and we look at our family, like, yeah, you can't sweep that shit under the rug.
No.
It doesn't help anybody.
No.
Once you, I mean, you got to bring it to the light. That's how you kill it. Yeah, that's how it loses its power.
Mm. Were you, like, kind of in overdrive with the drugs and the drinking to be what Kayla just said, like that cool, fun Aunt Amy, crazy Aunt Amy? Because I stopped drinking and drugging a little over 6 years ago, and my nephews, they were young. They were probably five at the time. I was, like, the fun, cool uncle, you know? But deep down, I was miserable. Mm-hmm. I hated myself, you know? And I rose to that level through drugs and alcohol and just overdrive. But my life was in complete shambles.
It was, yeah.
Like, no one really knew, you know, until they really just looked into it a little bit.
So what was rock bottom? You went to jail?
Yes.
What happened? I didn't even know you went to jail.
Oh, God. I was in
there. You're a horrible niece.
Well, I think I was very sheltered. I mean, I just... look, this is what I remember. I remember there was a boyfriend, like a scummy boyfriend. I remember you ran away with him.
Yes, I did do that.
And I remember I was at Mimi and Poppy's house. Mimi was on the phone with the police sobbing. I had never seen Mimi cry. She was crying uncontrollably. Just get my Patrick back. Just get my Patrick back. I don't, you had, there was a big tall vase in Mimi and Poppy's house that had coins in it. They would like collect the coins and then go turn them in. She had taken that. I had a little.
I've done that.
Dude, this is when she broke my heart. I had a little savings tin of money. She took that.
Oh.
And she had Patrick. And you ran away.
I tried to run away from my problems.
She tried to run away. That was what I thought was like, that's when I thought you got sober, was after that.
No.
Oh, yeah.
No, not
see,
yet.
I had no idea.
No.
So what year is this that you ran away, roughly? Trying to keep the timeline.
Yeah.
That is fuzzy. I'm not going to lie.
2004? You got sober in 2008, so it was a couple years before you got sober?
I mean, I was still in Ohio, so.
It was before I met him.
Were you still drinking when you met Wayne?
I wasn't sober yet.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, it had to be because I moved to Boston in 2007.
Yeah.
So.
It was probably.
05, 06.
Yeah.
Give or take.
Okay.
So then.
So explain. So
yeah, go
really
ahead.
Quick. You run away.
Yes.
You grab your son. What caused you to run away? Was it you said this was a boyfriend that you were with?
It was somebody I met that wasn't the right person to be with.
Okay.
And had this great idea, let's just move out of state. And I took off.
Where were you guys headed?
We went to Dry Kentucky, which was a dumbass idea.
Oh, wow.
And I was only gone a couple of days and I come back.
Yeah.
With your tail between your legs.
Yep.
Yeah, I know that feeling. Mm-hmm. But, and your parents were right there welcoming you right back.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you wish, so this is before you got sober, do you wish your parents put their foot down and said, no, you can't come back in and enabled you to move back?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. I love my parents, but it was because they loved me so much. They didn't realize it, but they were enabling me.
Yeah.
With certain things.
Right. No, that's an
important
piece.
Out of love.
Piece.
They just care about you so much. And it was until my parents were like, no, sorry. We're not associating with you anymore.
Mm.
Unless you go get your help and get sober. Then we'll talk to you again. And that's what a rock bottom, that was my rock bottom. But anyways, so you come back, and then what happens from when you come back, let's call it 2006 to 2008, what happens over those 2 years which led you to get sober and now sober 16 years?
My family, this is how mom and dad found out I had a problem. Dr. Nestor's office got this big long list with my face on it. I was getting prosecuted.
By the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
Because you filled too many prescription pills.
I had a bunch of felonies, deception to obtain.
Wow. Okay. Was it the letter with the little gold seal from the government that was sent to you, or they send people to come get you?
They didn't come get me. They just, mom told me, you have a doctor's appointment, so come to my house. And my mom and my dad took me to the doctor, and I thought, oh, shit. So, and this is when I was with Wayne.
Her husband.
This, we weren't married yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, something's up. So,
but my grandmother worked for that doctor's office.
Oh, okay.
So she probably knew already, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So they take you to the doctor's office, and what is what happens? They arrested
SWAT,
you?
SWAT team jumps
no,
out?
No.
What went down? Jeez.
They just said that I was showed all the prescriptions that I had filled.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you're going to be prosecuted. And that's when mom and dad come in. I said, well, I guess you all know I have a problem.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm. And that's when mom said, your ass is going to the prosecutor's office tomorrow morning. And I thought, well, fuck. But.
Yeah, you don't tell me no.
But that's still, I still didn't stop yet.
Yeah. Okay.
What happened?
Yeah, what happened?
You get that. They don't arrest you when you go in and talk to them. It just, that wasn't my aha moment, my epiphany. Hey, let me think. But I went to the prosecutor. He said, this is what's going to happen. You're going to get a summons. They never come and gave me a summons.
Mm-hmm.
But what had happened is I had got pulled over in Warren County for speeding.
Mm-hmm.
He said, do you know you got a warrant for your arrest? I said, a warrant? I never got summoned. So I went to jail, went in front of the judge. And this is when I first met Judge Spaeth, scared the shit out of me because he's a big man. And so I had to go back to court. This is going to make you laugh. Probably you'll laugh.
Mm-hmm.
But when somebody asks you, because I was getting OR bonded, which that means you get out for free today, he says, if I drug test you today, are you going to be clean? I was scared shitless, and I just froze, and I just shook my head yes, knowing I was going to light that damn cup up like a Christmas tree.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So I had to go to pretrial services the next day. And your mother found out about this, and she ate my ass up. But I had heard about people trying to bring in and pass a drug screen.
Fake urine. Yeah, I've done it a million times.
Oh, my God.
I used to have a Wizinator. But go ahead. Sorry, I'm cutting you off.
Did you take fake pee?
I tried. I failed terribly bad.
Oh, did you?
Wait, you took fake pee that was dirty and you failed it? Or you failed at getting the fake pee in?
No. What'd you do? You spill it everywhere? What happened?
Yeah, what happened?
I had Patrick pee in a baggie for me.
Oh, my God. That's so
terrible.
Didn't
know what I was doing. And then I thought, you dumbass, you're going to fail anyways because he's on Adderall.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
But I went to the wrong place to drug test. Mm-hmm. Instead of going to pretrial, I went up to probation. So somehow I just slid right through.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Look at that.
And then Patrick told your mother, and she just ripped my
Good for Patrick. Attaboy, Bubby.
How old is Patrick at this time?
He's 30.
At the time, when...
Oh.
What year was it? I'll backtrack the math.
It was 2007.
So he's like 13, 14.
Yeah, yes. He's a kid.
He's young.
That was my hardest relationship to rebuild, by the way.
We'll get into it. I want to hear all about it.
Geez.
So, okay. So the whole P-test debacle, you end up going to jail over it?
Not at that time, no.
Okay.
When did you go to jail?
Yeah, well, when did you get sober?
Like, yeah.
I want to hear the goods.
Let's get to the good part.
Well, let me tell you
about... Let's get to the rising above.
Yeah, go ahead.
So my aha moment, remember when Poppy had his knee surgery?
Which one? Yeah. The one, first, yeah.
One of them, but yeah. He had the Percocet.
Mm-hmm.
Got up, went to the bathroom.
Mm.
I grabbed him. I had to go to probation the next day.
Mm.
I got violated.
Mm.
I had 7 years of prison hanging over my head, too.
And you didn't care.
Well, that's that. My way of thinking's not right yet.
Yep.
Well, that's what woke me up. That was my bottom.
Yeah.
But my sponsor and her husband used to tell me, you know, you think you're at rock bottom, but there's always that trap door at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
You can always go farther.
Yep.
Mm. So when you first got sober, was it out of fear? Was it, like, did it... At that time, did it occur to you that you were, like, stealing pain pills from your father and, like, 7 years of prison? Like, did it sink in and it scared you and that's why you started to get sober? Or did you just get to the point where you were like, I don't want to live like this anymore?
All the above.
Yeah.
I got tired of the chaos in my head. You always had chaos.
Yeah.
Unmanageability.
Yeah.
In your head.
You know. I'm just, it's always that chase, always that chase.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. That's perfect. Yeah, right there. Sorry.
Yeah, So what happened? So you go to jail and you...
Wait, did you go to jail from the pain pills that you stole from your father? The
yes.
Percocets? You took them, you peed dirty.
Yeah.
And then they sent you... You went to prison?
No.
You went to jail?
Yes.
Okay. And then you went to jail right away after like they just then took you in the back?
Yeah.
Okay. And then how long are you in jail? But you're still not sober yet, right? Or you made the decision going into jail that you're not going to use in jail and you're going to try to turn your life around?
Yes. That's when the probation I had was trying to send me to prison. But they assessed me for the Monday program, River City, and then that's when I got into drug court.
Okay.
Drug court is a year-long program that was very strict. I had to move in. They forced me to move into my mom and dad, which I was willing at that time because I did not want to go to prison because we reside in a different county, and for me to qualify, I had to... live in that county.
Got it. With your parents.
Yes.
Yep.
So what's step one? What happened? Like, how did you get sober? Because there's a beautiful story on the other side of this. Like, that is the first, you know, rock bottom was the first day of the rest of your life. Like, who you are now is, like, such a different like, you're a fucking shining example for all people who suffer from addiction. So... Because, like, before that, you hadn't been to school, right? You didn't go to college.
No.
Yeah. So talk about what happened. Like, where did you take rock bottom and what the hell did you do with it?
Well, sitting there 62 days, I sat, thought about what I wanted. Drug court, you had to go to 3 meetings a week. I had group. I had to work. It gave me structure.
Mm-hmm.
It helped my relationship with him. I went to AA meetings every day. They saved my life.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What about, and maybe, I guess let's just keep AA out of it.
Right, right,
what
right,
about,
right.
What about meetings? Helped you so much? Was it the structure? Was it the accountability? What was it?
Structure, accountability, you know, just having somebody there that understood me. Somebody I could call. Somebody that called me out on my bullshit.
We talk about that a lot on this podcast, how, like, that's such a powerful thing, having connection and having someone see you and, like, meet you where you're at. Because Mimi and Poppy have never been addicts. They can't, they don't understand, you know. Your sister doesn't really understand. Like, having people who understand you and have been where you are and can call you on it, and, like, then it's not a, I'm mightier than thou type feeling. It's like, oh, dude, I've been here. Like, cut the shit. I know you're trying to manipulate. I know you're trying to, like, that's a powerful thing, I think.
Yeah.
What about the spirituality piece? Was that important? Did you believe in God? We haven't talked about that at all.
Yes, I believe in God.
Before, did you?
Yes.
Yeah. Did your relationship or your spirituality grow through meetings?
I think so. I needed help to understand better.
Yeah.
I remember it was the first 4th of July that I was out of jail. I had had a sponsor. We were riding in the 4th of July parade.
Mm-hmm.
I seen the person that did that to Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing I wanted to do is I wanted to take Domingo and ram him.
Mm. Yeah.
Domingo's my horse.
I thought you said a mango. And Domingo. Whack him over the head with a mango. That hurts too. I mean, whatever. I get it. I get your point.
I seen Patrick and Wayne having a good time laughing.
Yeah.
And I thought, I can't do that. I need to just block so Patrick don't see.
Yeah.
After the parade, I went to a meeting.
That's the first. Oh my God, I love that.
That's powerful.
Dude.
Well, I had to process what I went through.
Yeah.
Because I had rage.
Yeah.
And my sponsor says you need to pray.
Mm.
I said, how am I supposed to pray for somebody that is sick and twisted?
Yeah.
And then that's when she introduced me to the sick man's prayer.
Mm.
You have a good sponsor.
Yeah.
She used to piss me off bad.
That's a good sponsor, though. That's what a good sponsor is. You want to know what, though? I you were just, like, in awe, and me too.
No, I literally just got goosebumps when you said after that happened, you went to a meeting. Like, holy shit.
And you didn't do – but the miracle was that you put your son first. You thought about your son first. And you that's a very mature thing to do.
Yeah.
And as – look, I'm a, you know, addict. I'm very selfish, and I can be very selfish, especially when I was newly sober. Early in recovery, the first thought in my head is a selfish thought, you know. But it's like I'm divorced, right? And sometimes I want to go at my, you know, my ex, but it's about my daughter. And I mean, this is not to the magnitude of what you were talking about, but like that even just speaks to how mature you were in that situation and how you were really that willing to change. So kudos to you. That's
took a lot of practice.
That's amazing. Now,
how long were you sober? So you said you had just gotten out of jail. So it was, you were fresh. You were like a fresh little baby sober Amy, and that and you're boom right out of jail going in the 4th of July parade in freaking Trigger City.
July.
Yeah. Wow.
How long were you in jail for?
62 days.
62 days. Okay.
And then plus I had the Butler County Deputy Mounties behind me, and which I knew one of them because she was one of the COs.
Yeah. That was God.
That was God.
That was God.
100%. So then what happened? When did you start? I don't want to like tell your whole story, but how long were you in the program before you decided to go to school? And like,
I started going to school in 2013.
2013.
That's when I started my associates.
So you were sober for like 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then you made it, you were like, you, what made you decide that that's, so tell everyone what you do and like explain it a little bit. Cause to me, it's just such an, it's so powerful.
I am a licensed chemical dependency counselor. I had to take my test twice because I'm special.
but you passed it.
Yes.
But that's what I mean. Like, you, like, think about that. You started going to school. You used to be put in a fucking box, right? Yeah. And then you have all of this, like, life hits you with a hammer over and over and over again. And you have a learning disability and you addiction. And then, like, you take it and you're like, fuck that. Even though it's really hard for me to learn, even though it's a struggle, even though, like, I'm going to take this, I'm going to take what I've been through, and I'm going to use it to help other people. And, like, that's what you do every day. I've been to your work. I see it. I see how you help people. Like, it's so, so badass.
When I graduated with my bachelor's, I graduated with honors. I had the sum cum laude on my diploma.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
No, that's amazing.
No, she's big shit. I know. I know.
Where did you go to school?
Grand Canyon University.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. And actually, I have one more question. Is that a Karen sweatshirt? That's the sweatshirt. Oh. Isn't that Karen? No?
No. This is where I work.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I went to rehab at a place called Karen, and it looks like those. Karen. It has like those circles on it. That's cool, though. That's great. That's amazing. Do you love what you do?
Yes, I do.
You help a lot of people, I'm sure.
Yeah, I can call them on their bullshit because I can flip my brain back.
Yeah, you know. But that's the beauty of, we were just talking about a program a few minutes ago, and when you are cut from that fabric, you can sniff bullshit.
Yeah.
And you know the tricks, you know the manipulation. Like, for me, my first year of sobriety was brutal because I was trying to manipulate my sponsor, the people in my support group, and nobody. I mean, my parents, you said it, like, with your parents, they didn't know, they weren't addicts or alcoholics. And, you know, my parents, I could run circles around my parents. People at work, I could run circles around people at work. Anyone, you know, but when you're cut from the same fabric and the people know the games at the meetings.
When did it get better? When did it change? Like, because obviously, like I said, your life is so, it's such a powerful story now. But when did you finally feel
the first year of your recovery? I feel for me was the roughest. You know, it's a roller coaster of emotions, especially when you couldn't live at home.
Mm.
But it just, everything subsides. It gets easier. It gets better. You know, the harder you work,
yeah,
you know, blessings come.
Yeah. And what are some habits? Like, we talk a lot about what has helped build your recovery journey, your healing journey. Like, what has helped you stay on the course throughout the journey? So what are some of the things that you practice, whether it's calling a friend, whether it's praying, journaling, like whatever it is, what are the things that, you know, your habits that have really helped you to maintain not just sobriety, but like you live a very beautiful life. Like, you have a loving husband. You said your relationship with your son is much better now. You have a grandson. Like, what are the things that you do to maintain this level of being spiritually fit?
I still keep in check with meetings. I keep a structured life. I take care of my sobriety. You always got to remember for myself, if my recovery doesn't come first, everything I love comes last.
Do you have a higher power in your life now today?
God's my higher power.
That's amazing. Are you big on praying and meditation? And
I have Jesus Calling that I like to read every day. It's a daily devotional.
Devotional, yeah. That's, I have awesome. That one too.
And the daily reflection. I like the daily reflection too.
Yeah.
you're in the program. What was, and share whatever you're comfortable with, what was the amends process for you like? And amending with yourself, I feel like.
Myself was the hardest.
Yeah.
Because if you can't forgive yourself, how can you forgive others?
Or even love yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
What was that process like?
You have to practice. You got to rebuild your self-esteem. Positive affirmations.
Yeah.
We say positive affirmations a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's huge.
We were just talking about it. Yeah, it's so important to... There's a big difference, I think, between like liking yourself and loving yourself. You know, like really, truly being able to look in the mirror and say, like, I love who I am and what I do. And you talk a lot about esteemable acts. I love that. Like, it's much easier to love yourself when you're doing good in the world and mm-hmm. when you're not lying, not manipulating, not playing the game and, you know, surviving.
Yep.
Like that's when it gets hard. But when you're every day, you know, doing the work and helping others, you know, guiding others through that journey. Yeah, I bet that feels good.
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
It's awesome.
I did a lot of shitty things while I was out there. I wronged no, seriously, like I wronged so many people and I I had it embedded in my head that I was a complete piece of and like like breaking away from that and amending with yourself is very tough. So kudos to you. And what was it like with Patrick and that relationship? And it sounds like you guys are full circle now.
No, you're super close now. So how was that journey?
Bits and pieces didn't remember, but I was so wasted one time that he had to drive me home when he was 11 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
From 122 Hill all the way out to our house in Preble County.
How many miles is that? Far. It's far.
Probably 12, 14. For somebody that's 11.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. An 11-year-old.
That's so hard. Yeah.
Out in the country.
Mm.
No lights. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then if we would have been pulled over, there would have been a child endangerment charge.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I was just, when I was in jail, he was writing me letters of how mad he was.
Mm.
And then he would write another letter one day, what I do wrong, Mom? Mm. Why are you doing this to us? And then when we had to move in with my mom and dad and I was able to move back home, he stayed with my mom and dad for a while.
Mm.
It just took a while.
Yeah.
You know, showing him I was going to change. You can't talk, you know, saying I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. It's all action.
Mm-hmm.
It's all action. You know, you can run your mouth for days. And it ain't going to do you any good. It's
16 years of you showing up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What has been the journey like? So do you sponsor as well as you're a counselor, right?
I don't sponsor anymore.
Because you probably have so much going on with work. And
yes.
Like it's like you're sponsoring all these people.
She's still in school. So yeah.
I'm trying to get my dual license. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to get my master's.
Okay.
And then I don't want to get into where I cross a path where I'm counseling and then run into somebody at a meeting that sponsor counsel. I can't do that.
Yeah, it's conflict, yeah.
Yeah, our Ohio board is pretty strict.
Yeah. So you're helping people on a daily basis.
What's your favorite story of... Like, you don't have, obviously, like, you know, confidentiality, but what's your favorite story of, like, success story that you've been a part of?
Oh, gosh. I had somebody that was ILC. By the way, I had the opportunity of ILC. I don't know if you know what that is. It's called in lieu of conviction, which my felonies could have been gone. And I lost that. Mm-hmm. But this person had ILC, and I thought, he's never going to make it. He fought me all the way. His probation officer come over and talked with him. But the comment she made, oh, my God. Am I allowed to say what she
you
said?
You can say whatever you want.
But she says, my supervisor standing right next to me. But she said, you're going to do this motherfucking treatment. My bigger than yours. I don't give a fuck what we're. But he was just not willing to do it. He was pissed. He had a whole bunch of marijuana, but it was the wax marijuana plus a gun charge.
Mm.
But he also wanted the ILC.
So what happened?
He finally gave in, started being willingly, started dropping clean, and he completed.
Yeah. And this was just like a hope. You just were like, there's no way in hell he's ever going to get sober.
No, he was rude, disrespectful in my group. I'd walked him out a couple times.
Yeah.
And then he wrote me the nicest thank you card.
Oh, wow.
And when I printed his certificate, he gave me a hug. I about hit the fucking floor.
Oh, my God. That's what it's all about, though.
Yeah.
That is what it's all about.
He was probably my hardest challenge.
Yeah.
And, but all of that work that you put into helping him paid off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you always say, right? You can't keep it if you don't give it away.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
But where I did drug court, which is a specialty docket court, I do two drug courts now.
What does that mean?
I do an OVI court where I represent my company, and I get to go in like they used to go in for me and state how I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I go and talk to the judge, the probation.
Mm-hmm.
But that was what I wanted to do when I started this journey.
Yeah.
So,
how much do you think mental health plays a role in addiction? Because you've been on both sides of it, right? And you've seen now you're deep in the mental health field. Like, I think our system is a little bit broken, right? Where it's like, we always talk about what did you do? What did you do? What did you do? Versus
mental health plays a big role.
What happened to you? And right.
What is the reason why they're numbing?
Yeah.
What? There's some kind of trauma, something that drives them to not want to feel.
And getting to the root of that is much more effective than just trying to, like,
you got to peel the layer off that onion.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And sometimes that's difficult.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of people don't even know.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm my addictions are different, but I have the same, you know, my symptoms are different, but I have the same problem, trauma, right? Yeah. Like, that's the root of all addiction and coping. And like, I'm a wicked codependent, you know, and I go to meetings and struggle with that. But it wasn't until I realized that, like, that's just a symptom. It's not the problem. And I started to peel back the layers.
Yeah.
That I realized, like, oh yeah, like, first healing starts within. Like, you can't just stop taking pills and expect that life is going to get better. Like, there's so much inner work that has to be done.
There's still the void.
Did you try to fill that void with other stuff when you first got sober? Like, did you find yourself
watching porn?
Kevin?
Sorry, I had to throw it out there. I do not know from experience, I swear. sorry.
I went to meetings every single day, sometimes twice a day.
That's awesome.
That's amazing.
I had to. I was scared.
Yeah.
I was scared.
I get it. I mean, well, I don't get it, but I can imagine. Yeah. Like, you're holding on for dear life. Yeah.
What was the most eye-opening thing, peeling off the layers of the onion that you just talked about, what was the most eye-opening thing for you that you learned about yourself during that process?
Just being able to talk about the Patrick's abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And just saying that it wasn't my fault.
Mm. Yeah.
So build it. So awareness, essentially.
That's mm-hmm. powerful.
Having the awareness and knowing your self-worth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's amazing.
And 5 years later, I got to be the guest speaker for drug court graduation. And I asked Patrick, I said, are you okay with... I said, you know, sometimes every now and then I worry about the abuse. I said that I didn't get you away. I didn't protect you. He says, Mom, you're my hero. You got me away from him.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yeah, that had to be so, yeah.
I love that. He loves you.
No, they're so tight. They have such a good relationship, and it's so... beautiful to see.
Oh, that's so amazing.
Like, yeah.
Every other weekend we have card night with my mom and dad. Now that's comical.
And he's a father now, and to see him, you know, he's, yeah. Like, there's been a lot of heavy shit in the family, and there's been a lot of trauma and, like, stuff I didn't even know. You know, I didn't know he drove you home at 11 years old. Like, stuff... that he also had to deal with. And I can only imagine that seeing you rise above and seeing how you handled it and finally faced it, you know, instead of running from it and numbing from it and finally facing it at a really critical moment in his life played a huge role in him becoming the man he is today and the father he is today and having, yeah, just like, you guys have a beautiful relationship and you having Wayne, like the family that you have, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, me and Wayne almost didn't make it either.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Did
Patrick have a boy or a girl?
He had a boy.
How old is the young boy now?
He's 8.
He's 8.
Elliot Tate. We call him Tater.
Does Tater. My cousin's nickname growing up was Bubby.
Okay.
And so we have Bubby and Tater.
Oh, my God. That is so cute.
Yeah.
Does he drive you crazy?
No.
Oh, he's a good little boy.
I try to sugar him up and send him home.
Because, you can send him home. You don't have to worry
about... Grandma. Granny. Granny That's goat.
Amazing. Yeah.
Except I have to hide... the chocolate when Emery is at my house.
My son, yeah.
That's how cute are her kids? He's funny, yeah. Emery.
Emery got sick last time we stayed at my house.
Yeah. Well, that's your fault. I told you. We keep a tight lock on the sugar at my house, but Amy's like, oh, sure, have another.
He was sneaking it.
I caught Emery sneaking a... What did he
Yeah,
have?
They were at the party, donuts. Too. Was it donuts or something?
I saw him and his hair, like his big hair, just the blonde hair, like running through. And I was like, they're up to something. Because my daughter was in there as well. I'm like, they're all up to something in there. Sure enough, they all had donuts on the bunk beds, on the bottom bunk. And I put my head in there and I was like, guys... give me the box. You can eat the one that's in your hand. They all had one in their hand. I said, I won't say anything about that, but give me the box. They gave me the box. I went around. I'm like, Kayla, they all stole donuts. You better go get
it. That was so funny. So, looking back, if someone is in the position that, like, you're rock bottom, right? Like, if someone is going through what you went through, abusive relationships, your son being abused, an addiction, like, what would you say to them right now to, what would you say to give them hope?
I would share what I've been through and just see, how can I help you? I'm here for you.
Acts of service.
I'm here for you.
Yeah.
So I think the message is too, like, there's help out there. Like, if you're going through it, there are people that have been through it, mm-hmm. and there is help out there. They're not alone.
No.
And that's one of the most important things.
And there's more resources now too.
Yeah.
I think it's really, I mean, my favorite part about this whole thing tonight, like, I obviously learned a lot, but I think the most powerful thing for me was that you said, like, shit hit the fan and you went to a meeting. Like, there was help there. You just had to show up, right?
Yeah.
Like, God moves in our lives, but we still have to bring our shovel and, like, work.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the healing happens, right? When we're willing to do the work and also say, hey, I need help. Like, that's such a powerful statement. Like, when you say, oh, I went to two meetings a day, like, that's you saying, hey, I need help.
Yes.
And not being afraid to go get it.
And see, like, if I was struggling,
mm-hmm.
it's not fair to dump it on mom or dad or Wayne or anybody because they don't understand.
Yeah.
Dump it on people that do understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why it's such a successful thing, right? Is because there's a camaraderie, there's a tribe, and I have learned so much since starting this podcast, hearing other people in recovery talk about, like, yeah, man, this guy stayed with me. He was with his family, and I said that I really wanted a drink, and he said, come meet me at this diner, and he stayed with me until 1 o'clock in the morning until that feeling passed.
That was me.
Was that you?
Oh, yeah, all these guests we learned so much about. That was me. Come on. No, I'm kidding. It was me, but
no, but that's what I mean. Like, that's, like, such a powerful, that's such a powerful thing, though. Like,
yeah. No, it is.
There are people out there, and, like, I think what's so powerful about it is, like, you are one of those people now.
Yeah.
And you are one of those people now. And I am not one of those people now, but I would be if they needed me. But, like, yeah, that's why it works.
Well, I think this is also a good time to reiterate, because you said it before too, you know, drugs and alcohol. Those are all symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
You are cut from the same fabric that uh-huh. we're cut from.
We all are.
And we just have different symptoms and different impulsive decisions that we make. But I, you know, just to touch upon you went to a meeting that Kayla was saying, the smart feet and the mind follows.
Yeah.
And you had the willingness to have those smart feet because you were sick and tired of being sick and tired. And mm-hmm. I'm going to be honest. I've had 3.5 years of sobriety once before I relapsed, and then I had 6 years. I had a bunch of 1 years. The white key tags, I have probably two bags of them somewhere. It's insane. 16 years of sobriety is not easy. The longer you stay sober, the road gets narrower.
Mm.
And I want to say it's because of people like you that make it so readily available and accessible for people that came in after you, like myself. So I want to thank you for staying sober and being a power of example to younger sober people like myself and my other sober peers. So you're doing great. You're helping more people, even just being on the podcast and
being open, being vulnerable. Yeah.
You're a miracle. And I want to thank you for being on tonight. And
yes. You're welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Awesome.
We love you.
We love you. Wait, hold on.